the Novel Ideas Podcast, old sport.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books, old sport.
We love books so much, old sport. We've decided we basically live in one. Old sport.
Yeah, we're too characterish to be real people, so we must be in a book, old sport.
So our first order of business was getting an obvious verbal tick, old sport.
Yes, quite, old sport. That's the brand of deodorant I wear, old sport.
It totally sounds like it.
Yes, it does.
So we'll just be talking like this for the rest of the podcast, old sport.
Yes, I imagine that won't be irritating at all, old sport.
Yeah, guys. Gatsby says old sport a lot.
Every single sentence where he has composure ends with old sport.
And that is not an exaggeration.
No, it's not.
Sometimes twice in one sentence. I went and saw The Great Gatsby, the movie, on Friday night, and at the end all my friends were saying old sport, like, nonstop. And I said, yeah, he probably could have said old sport even more. And he said it a fuck ton. Poor Leonardo DiCaprio. He sounded okay saying it a lot, but...
He probably enjoyed it.
So yeah, we're reading The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald this week. I'm going to go ahead and say probably old enough to not have a spoiler policy, and just the fact that almost everyone has to read it in high school, with the exception of Jessica, weird. Somehow never has read this book.
Weird.
So we're judging you right now.
Yeah, come on, Jessica. I would say if you want to see the movie and care about being spoiled, then maybe spoiler alert for that. But yeah. With the book, if you're listening just for the book, which you should be because that's what it's about, then I would imagine you're probably familiar with it already.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you can read the book in exactly the same amount of time as you... takes to see the movie. That's and you can do it for free. It's available online.
Factual statement. The movie's 2.5 hours long, and it probably took me about that long to read the book.
Yeah, the book is 9 chapters long, and I'd say you're probably looking at approximately 15 minutes a chapter.
My copy was about 160 pages.
I'm not sure how long mine was. Mine was a PDF from some Australian university.
Mm. But regardless, it's not that long.
No.
Which is probably why when we did read it in high school, it was pretty much the only book all year that just about everyone read, and everyone liked it.
Yeah, that's true. There was not really much in the way of hate on this particular book, though it is a little bit obnoxious to me that I was in honors and AP English classes, and still there were a lot of people that didn't finish a lot of the books.
Oh, yeah. That drew people constantly were coming up to me and saying, why are you reading for English class? Why are you just going on Spark Notes? I was like, you're an asshole. There's a reason I have 100% in this class and the teacher loves me.
Yep.
Guys.
Well, Spark Notes is perfectly fine for your AP English class if you want to get a low B.
Some of the teachers, they started, reading the SparkNotes quizzes, and then they would, like, fuck people over.
They'd intentionally not ask those kinds of questions? Uh-huh. Nice.
Because we found out that one of the teachers was just giving the SparkNotes quiz, and so, like, everyone who was just getting on SparkNotes was acing it.
Of course.
And then they figured out what was going on, and then they started purposefully screwing people over, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, they could also do the questions from the SparkNotes quiz and then fail anybody who gave answers that were obviously from SparkNotes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you could have all kinds of fun with that as a teacher.
If I was a teacher, I would memorize all the SparkNotes pages and then just laugh at people. You got out of SparkNotes, didn't you? Yeah, okay.
Ask them an obvious question that was not listed in the SparkNotes. Something not particularly relevant to themes and plot, but something that someone who actually read the chapter would definitely know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, why are you asking about this? That wasn't in the, read the book. R-E-A-D-A-B-O-O-K.
I want that to be our theme song.
Well, I thought about making it our theme song at one point.
We'd probably get in trouble, though.
And then I decided to do a different bump for every episode.
So, anyway, the reason we're doing The Great Gatsby this week is because the movie did just come out. And that usually sparks people's interest in, at least mildly sparks their interest in the literature it came from. I guess I can't say it becomes a thing. In the case of The Hunger Games, it becomes a thing, but in the case of The Great Gatsby, it's probably not so much of a thing.
I'm guessing that there will probably be a small spike in the sales of Great Gatsby, except that since it is freely available online, probably not.
I feel bad for anyone who goes and sees the movie because they think it looks hip and cool from the trailers and then is like, oh, it's a book! Because the movie's basically just the book.
But I bet it's a very shiny looking book.
It is extremely shiny. I will give it that. So, genre?
Literary fiction.
Yep, this is another lit fic. Like good old Maurice.
Since it gets taught in school so often, and it's from, I don't know, it's almost borderline classic.
I would say it is an American classic.
Yeah, I would definitely say that.
And apparently, F. Scott Fitzgerald was the person who coined the term jazz age.
Oh.
So, that's another reason he's kind of an American classic author, is because he represents, you know, the 20s so fully that he named them, basically.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've read several newspaper articles about him because everyone
is writing trying about to sound right now,
cool right? Since the movie was coming out.
What can I dig up about Fitzgerald that everybody doesn't know?
Yeah. So, plot synopsis.
Bored rich people are bored together, old sport.
Yeah, one last old sport.
Yeah. Well, I don't promise that's the last one. We felt like if we didn't put it in the synopsis, we wouldn't be doing the book a service.
Anyway, yeah, so. you'd be ruining something. Something true.
Mm.
And I guess if anyone's listening to this and hasn't read it, just a really quick rundown. Nick Carraway, who's the narrator of the book and is from the Midwest, moves to West Egg, which is a fictional town, but is, we think, basically on Long Island in New York. His next-door neighbor is Gatsby, who is throwing these lavish, enormous lavish parties. And Nick gets invited to one, meets Gatsby, learns that Gatsby is in love with Nick's cousin Daisy. So Nick kind of helps set the two of them up, even though Daisy's married. And everything kind of goes to shit because, you know, her husband doesn't like that very much. And after a big old confrontation, Gatsby and Daisy accidentally run over and kill Tom's mistress in a car. And then her husband kills Gatsby. That's...
Yeah, that's basically... The stuff that happens.
There's deeper shit, but that's the basic rundown.
We'll get into the deeper shit.
So, setting.
The 1920s, New York City, and West Egg and East Egg, which I guess are supposed to be two peninsulas that stick out of Long Island or something.
Yeah, and in the book, it's made pretty clear. West Egg is where all the up-and-coming rich people yes. are. And East Egg is where all the old money is.
Yes.
So East Egg looks down on West Egg.
Right. And Nick somehow has a cheap house in the middle of a bunch of mansions.
Yeah, he has this $80 a month tiny little house wedged between, like, Gatsby's mansion and some other guy's mansion.
Yeah.
How do you manage that? That is... A literary device, sir.
We needed to be Gatsby's neighbor, but we didn't want to put him in, like, the gardener's shed or something.
So, random house that never got torn down.
Right.
Point of view is first person. The book is being written by Nick Carraway. At a couple points, he says stuff like, as I'm writing this, I notice that. I'm talking a lot about Gatsby's parties, but I promise I did go to work.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
I was there pretty much all day. It's just that's not that exciting.
So we had a short debate this week about who the protagonist of this story is.
Yes.
So let's put it in the same form as another recent episode. Who's the protagonist?
What was the title of the book?
Irrelevant.
Yeah, well, we read Maurice, we were making jokes that it wasn't Maurice. Right. We read Jane Eyre, we were making jokes that it was Mr. Rochester. But in this case, even though the book is titled The Great Gatsby, I would argue Gatsby's not the protagonist.
Gatsby doesn't even appear in, like, 4 or 5 of the 9 chapters of this book.
He takes a long time to show up.
Yeah.
It surprised me how long he took to show up.
He does take a while to show up. And then he's not even there for the last chapter.
He's dead
though
last
that's
chapter.
A lot in part to his being dead. If he was there, it'd be a different genre of book. But we finally had to go to the... Well, you know, Nick doesn't really do anything.
He's mostly an observer.
We finally had to go to the protagonist tiebreaker. You can use this in any story. We're not certain who the protagonist is. Who actually changes and grows over the course of the story, though I guess there are occasionally stories where it's just, look at this protagonist!
Yeah.
Look at things bounce off of him. Now the story is over and they're the same.
Yeah, I guess so, but
it has been known to happen, but it's usually pretty obvious because they're featured. They're like in the middle of the screen the whole time when that happens.
Yeah, and in this case, although Nick doesn't do a lot, he is around at the end, and he seems to be the one who has the most feelings and reaches some revelations about himself and about the world. So, although the other characters have much more agency, Nick does... He's ultimately pretty much the only one who changes.
Yeah.
So, we went with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in the opening of the book, Nick moves to New York and gets his absurd house among all the mansions. And, well, let's talk about Nick just a little bit.
Okay. He's a Midwesterner.
Midwest being defined as anything west of the Ohio River, apparently.
I think Gatsby is originally a Midwesterner, but he's from Minnesota.
Yeah.
We're not really sure where Nick is from, I don't think.
And someone else mentions the Middle West and mentions San Francisco.
I remember that. And I was like, that is not the Midwest.
Like, you're starting to take liberties with Midwest. At some point, it stops being Midwest and just starts being West.
I like to imagine Nick is a Kansas farm boy.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, personal bias, but it works. He's a wholesome, young, innocent thing.
That's right. He's just trying
to go to New York to make his fortune.
As a bondsman. Not a bondsman, a bond salesman.
As Bond.
A bondsman is a different thing. Yes. As James Bond.
And just for anyone who doesn't know anything about the 1920s and the stock market and the Depression, I mean, you should have paid more attention in class, first of all.
Hey, through the 20s, stock market was great.
Yeah, so selling bonds was crazy lucrative. Banks were making tons of money. Everyone who had anything in the stock market was getting filthy rich. So Nick entering that profession is not a guarantee that he's going to get rich, but it gives him a pretty good chance.
Right.
And then it ended up that everyone was lending out money they didn't actually have. And then so when they actually needed it, everything just kind of collapsed and we had the Great Depression.
A classic bubble.
That was an extremely oversimplified version, but that's the gist. So that's why Nick goes to New York to get this job. Pretty glamorous living. It's not like if one of your friends said, I'm going to go work on Wall Street, and you were like, loser. It's a little different than that. And that's his main goal, really.
Is to just
Get some money.
Acquire some wealth. I don't think he knows what he's going to do after that.
Yeah. He hasn't really thought it out that far.
He seems to kind of vaguely want to have a mate and settle down at some point. Mm-hmm. Just have a very brief, very mild amount of angst over that because he turns 30 during the
book. Oh, yeah, and he says he imagines a lonely 10 years ahead.
Yes.
Whatever.
Get over it.
You're 30.
Please, if you're a wealthy guy in New York, I'm pretty sure you can find some company. Whatever your preferred flavor is.
True.
Yes.
We don't know that much more about him. He has some kind of cleverness in him somewhere that he uses occasionally.
He does. I really wish that he had used it a little more throughout the novel, but I don't know, maybe it's just not appropriate to have levity for a lot of those scenes.
That's one thing about the book, as kind of a side note, that always surprised me, is it's about the 1920s and going to parties and the jazz age and all this crazy fun times, but then the tone and the ultimate conclusion of the book are pretty dark.
Yeah, it's a pretty serious tone to it.
It's not really just a happy la-la-la-la book, which I always expected to be just because of the setting, but it's totally not.
Yeah, the first party is maybe a little more carefree, but even then, there are some kind of weird moments in it.
Mm-hmm. So Nick is lucky enough that he lives nearby one of his, I think, second cousins?
I don't remember if it's specified.
And one of his cousins of some kind, yeah. And then her husband, who he went to Yale with.
Right. And unlike most literature, his cousin wasn't the woman that he was interested in.
Yes. Very true.
Or at least older literature.
He was charmed by her, but that's just because she charms men in general, and not because he was interested in her one specifically. Of
those charming women.
Yes. She has a habit of talking in a half whisper.
Yes.
So you have to lean forward to listen to her. And apparently some people found that off-putting, but Nick thought it was kind of charming.
She comes across as someone who might be fun to hang out with, at least some of the time. Though she is... She doesn't impress you with her sweeping intelligence, necessarily.
No. And she's also pretty obviously fake, it sounds like, because at multiple times Nick mentions her laughing fakely or hollowly or, you know, trying to be gay, but kind of not.
And she's one of those people who knows that they have some charisma and then plays it up a little bit to just try to draw everyone into their circle.
Yeah.
I don't know that she's that interested in actually knowing people, though, as much as she isn't just being admired.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And she's not 100% just, like, fake person, but...
No.
That's definitely her role in her social status.
Right.
At the moment, or at the beginning,
especially. It seems like there's a lot of that among the rich people in this book, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of... It almost seems like that's what you do. And then if you... So, this when they're hanging out with Tom's mistress,
mm-hmm.
and she decides she wants a puppy,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, he's cute. And, like, that seemed semi-real, but most of the rest of that did not. And most of the stuff at the parties didn't seem that real. And
what do you mean?
Like, as far as personality goes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think people were... I think everybody was putting on a face most of the time.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. Including Gatsby.
Yeah. And the only person who really doesn't is Tom.
Yeah, and Tom's...
And we're supposed to think that... we're supposed to think that he's a lout. Because he is a lout.
Yeah. I was reading a review of the movie, and the reviewer described Tom as charmlessly brutish.
Which is a great description.
I loved that description of him. That's perfect. He really is. Because he's a big old... He was an athletic star, so he's huge and muscular. And... I think at one point Daisy even mentions that he could basically just crush her if he wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's described as one of those people who peaks at 21, and everything from there seems like a long, slow anticlimax.
Uh-huh.
He was a football, a star end in football, apparently.
but he's physically intimidating and, you know, cheating on his wife multiple, well, at the time only with one woman,
right.
But we know that he has done it in the past.
This is the most recent one.
Yes. So he's not going to stick with his current mistress, probably.
Yeah, and he's very direct, but not in, like, the kind of honest, charming way that some people can be, just in the way of all of a sudden in the middle of another conversation is, I want to do this, who's doing this?
Right.
Tom, we weren't even talking about that. Well, I'm going, so who's going? Well, I guess we are now.
Yeah, they're trying to have this kind of charming conversation, and then he's like, Nick, I'm going to take you to the stables. I don't want to go.
I don't even like stables. We'll come see the stables, but okay, we're going to the stables. Damn it, Tom.
Daisy's like, I wanted to talk to my cousin.
Yeah.
Get out of here, Tom.
I want to take you to the stables and talk about why white people are better than everyone else.
Totally. That's what he wants to do.
That is what he wants to do.
More on that later.
Yeah, we'll get into that in the issues section.
and then aside from the Buchanans, we have Daisy's friend, Jordan Baker, who's a golfer.
Yes.
She's a great sportswoman, apparently.
Yeah, she keeps being described as athletic, but golf seems to be her only sport. I'm not saying that doesn't mean she can't be athletic. It's just, I don't know, maybe that was considered athletic back then.
I think it's because she wears, like, pants instead of dresses, so
that's,
she's athletic.
That's probably what that meant, yeah.
And not so much that she's, I mean, she's not going to look like female golfers today, I'm sure, in terms of build and muscle.
Well, no, that's because people didn't lift weights in the 1920s, especially women. She struck me as being, like, the boredest of the bored rich people there.
Yeah, I said before we started that Jordan just doesn't really seem that interesting. And
I said she doesn't choose to be interesting, you know? She chooses to be not interesting.
And I really like that description of Jordan. I think that works really well.
And she chooses to not be interested in anything. Mm-hmm. She's doing that thing.
Yeah.
Nothing is exciting to me because nothing could possibly be exciting if you're as cool as I am.
Yeah, when Nick first shows up and sees her, she's just lying on the couch, not moving and not speaking. And then after he's been there for however long, she just goes, I've been sitting on this couch all day, and, like, stands up, and he's like, whoa, you talk?
He's describing her posture as, like, she was trying to balance something on her chin.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's not much else to say about her. She and Nick have kind of a thing, but it's certainly not a very passionate thing.
No, they kiss once.
And he kind of likes her, but, I mean, it's hard to like someone too much when they're acting disinterested all the time.
Yeah, he thinks himself, like, he might be in love with her once or twice, but then he kind of gets over that pretty fast. And she serves a lot as a means of exposition, because she has been Daisy's friend long enough that she has the insight on Daisy's past with Gatsby and her marriage.
Right.
So, I guess that leaves us with only one really big main character.
Gatsby himself.
Yes. I was actually referring to Wolfsheim.
Yeah, he is a major character. He fixed the World Series.
In 1919. Right. Was that actually a thing I was going to ask
you? Yeah, that was the Black Sox scandal.
Okay.
That was 1919.
That's awesome. Anyway, yes, Jay Gatsby, or James Gats.
Yes.
He has several different backstories that we get told throughout the course of the novel.
Right.
The first thing Nick hears about him is that he probably killed a man. Someone says he's cousin to the Kaiser.
Right.
People say all this crazy other shit about him at his party.
What's the mysterious new money?
Yeah. How did he get his money? What's his past like? They don't know his family.
Right.
And he tells Nick at one point that he inherited all his money from his family, who's all dead. But then at the end, we meet his father.
Right.
So we know that's not true. And he's always getting these mysterious calls from Chicago and Detroit.
And Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Philadelphia's on the phone, sir.
Which are actually, today, all kind of synonymous with corrupt cities. I wonder if that was the case in the 1920s.
I would imagine it will for Chicago. Especially.
Chicago, definitely. You know, he fought in the war.
Yep.
He actually did fight in the war. We don't know how much of what he said he did in the war is
true. He did say, when he was being truthful one time, he did say he made it up to major. And Nick thought that the medal he had looked real, at least.
Oh, yeah, the medal from Montenegro.
So I think the war hero story probably is true. It's just he doesn't really play that one up very much. Probably because most people who come back from war, even if they're war heroes, don't really want to talk about it.
Yeah. I also did like the comment that Nick made when Gatsby's telling him about his war exploits, where he said he understood why Jordan didn't believe him because he just said things in a way that sounded fake.
Yeah.
It sounded like he wasn't telling the truth.
Maybe that was part of his thing. That's one of one of Lazarus Long's best ways to lie. The first one is to tell part of the truth and just withhold parts of it, which I think most people do. And the second one is to tell the whole truth, but tell it in such a way that no one believes you.
Right. You tell the whole truth, but then everyone thinks you're lying because it's so crazy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so Gatsby's definitely concerned with being a gentleman. That's the reason for all his old sports.
Right.
The way he talks is obviously consciously polished.
Right.
And when he's trying to be one of the, you know, rich, high-class society that fits in, he definitely uses that.
Well, one of the things we find out after his death, because his father has one of his old books, and he has a schedule in there, mm-hmm. and it includes physical and mental training and elocution training.
Uh-huh.
And so he definitely worked really hard to be a presentable, good-looking, capable of having a conversation, making a good impression, charming type of person,
mm-hmm.
who spoke well. And I was, you know, like, maybe one of the things in the book that, because it's such a short book, that maybe didn't quite get fleshed out all the way, is I was wondering why he wanted so badly to be liked. I didn't know if it was just because he was ambitious or if there was something else going on there.
Yeah, because it wasn't necessarily like his parents didn't give a shit about him, so he had to go out and find people who liked him because his dad was really upset.
Yeah.
He thought he was a, you know, great guy. And, I mean, maybe he was just one of those people who just really wants people to like him. There are people out there who are more concerned than other people mm-hmm. with having a lot of friends, and then there are people who have, you know, two friends, and they're like, well, I have two friends, what, I was good enough.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
I didn't know if maybe it was part of, that was supposed to be an indication of how big his obsession with Daisy was.
That he,
like, he went to all that trouble to make it possible to meet her to begin with. Like, it wasn't a,
okay,
it, like, it
I
wasn't,
see what you're saying.
As opposed to, I got rich and then moved to New York and started having these parties to make sure I'd meet her, but no, the whole plan all along was to get rich and be this charming guy who'd be capable of someday throwing big parties in New York to make her, to find an excuse to come see her.
Right. Or, yeah, even how much he had to do to just meet her and impress her in the first place.
Right. Because you do notice, though, that he drops his shields when, so to speak, when he's talking to her or about her.
Mm-hmm.
Is the one time he drops the old sport is anytime Daisy's involved. So that's, I mean, it just makes it all the more obvious that's an affectation since he drops it when the one thing he's really passionate about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the only thing.
Well, it's the only thing anyone in the whole book's passionate about, really.
Yeah, it's true. Gatsby is obsessed with Daisy to an almost creepy point.
Yeah, it's borderline, for sure.
Yeah, he moves across from her, and he throws these huge parties and gets rich to try and tempt her to come to them, and has never been interested in a woman in the 5 years they've been apart, and that's, I mean, pretty extreme.
And he's been chasing for so long that he's kind of developed these expectations that are a little too high. Like, he won't give her time to,
yeah,
to work.
Nick definitely makes the observation that Gatsby's been holding Daisy in this dream pedestal for so long that there's no way the real Daisy, no matter how charming and great she is, could possibly live up to his standards. And he's just trying to push her along to become that person, and she can't do it.
Right. Because even if she wants out of her, I don't know if it's full-blown shitty, but her not very good marriage, then, like, you can't just do that, like, at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, and she's a kid.
Right. It takes a little time to separate yourself.
Well,
if that's even what you're going to do, especially because married people in this book don't seem to get too hung up on that for the most part.
Yeah, and I would say the biggest thing to me that seemed like the sticking point was that Gatsby wanted Daisy to have only ever been in love with him. So, you know, in that hotel scene, he's trying to force her to say that she never loved Tom. And finally she says that she can't say that because she did love him when they first got married. And then Gatsby's freaking out, and she's freaking out. Tom, like, everyone's freaking out.
Right.
But, you know, Gatsby, because he was so in love with her and focused on getting her, he just assumed she was trapped in a completely loveless marriage that she hated and was pining for him the entire time, too. But she wasn't, because most people at some point say, I have to move on from this and do what I can.
Right. And it's definitely, like, a hallmark of jealous characters and occasionally jealous real-life people that they want to be the only object of someone's affections, I guess the stereotype would be the boyfriend who gets crazy jealous when he finds out his girlfriend slept with, like, 7 other people, and he's only been with, like, 1.
Oh, in the past.
Yeah. That kind of thing. And it's like, well, that was then.
Yeah, that doesn't matter anymore.
Right. Gatsby seems to have a little thread of that in him, for sure.
I would definitely agree with that. Moral issues?
Yeah, okay, well, you can get to Tom. Back to Tom's racism now.
Yeah, alright. So Tom's a racist.
Tom is a racist. Believes in the supremacy of the Nordic race.
Yes.
White people.
Yeah, in case you didn't know that.
Yeah. That other races are inferior and that they are scheming to overthrow the Nordic people. And has been reading books that prove it's true.
Yes.
In scientific terms.
Yes. Daisy makes the observation that Tom's been reading all sorts of books like that with big words lately.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
I do give credit to the other characters for kind of smiling and dismissing Tom's form of racism, at least.
Isn't there one point where Tom's bitching about that, and then Jordan says, everyone here is white?
Yeah.
She's like, calm down.
She's like, what are you talking about? Okay, crazy, calm down.
One thing I did like about the movie is he, all of his servants are black, and they're all in the room, and he's just, like, yelling about the master race and stuff.
And they're probably, in the book, there probably were servants in the room a couple times. They just weren't mentioned because they were servants.
Right.
So I kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And that scientific racism thing, which is definitely a component of, definitely been a component of it for a long time. I don't know if it's always been there or if that's like an Enlightenment and later thing, but people have for a long time tried to justify that this race tends to have these characteristics and this tends to have these, and they're just, it's very rare that they overlap because they're just born to it.
Yeah, I've read a fair amount about scientists in Civil War era-ish America trying to prove that black people were inferior, so they had to be slaves.
Right.
That was a huge thing racists were trying to do to try and appease all the abolitionists who were like, no,
right,
stop it.
And for that matter, Nazism certainly has a really...
Yes.
I mean, it's really like the major element of it, because if you have Nazism without the racism, you have just plain old fascism.
You just have jerks.
Well, you have Mussolini. If you add a weird eugenic element to it, then it becomes Nazism.
Yeah. The Nazis spent a lot of time and energy trying to prove that the Germans were the best.
Well, that's why Germans... That's why so much of a, like, cultural type of study was... A lot of the early versions of it came out of Germany, because Germans, even before the Nazi Party came into power, were pretty obsessed with that. Musicology, for example, is all comes out of Germany at the beginning, which is why the big composers that non-musicians know, like Bach and Mozart and Beethoven and Wagner and Brahms and Mahler,
are all German.
Are all German.
I never thought about that.
Isn't that interesting?
I never thought about that.
Right.
That is interesting.
So I guess that's
well
kind
played,
of a
Germany.
Yeah, that's kind of a side note, but yeah, the Nazis were especially interested in that and funded tons of like archaeological investigations.
Oh yeah, they were obsessed with history.
All these like that's the kernel of truth in the Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah,
the Nazi obsession with archaeology and
trying to prove, oh, these artifacts in Germany were here thousands of years before anyone else,
right,
evidence of the German race in other parts of the world, and
yeah,
all that crap.
Because there's only one way to be civilized, and it's this way.
Yeah, because everyone's dumb.
Which is basically what racism boils down to.
Yeah,
is there's only one way to be civilized, and it's my way.
Yeah, that's another reason Tom comes across as a total stupid idiot.
Yeah,
and like Ben said, he's. When he first started saying that, I went, uh-oh. But then the other characters were pretty much like, Tom, calm down.
They're like, dude.
So I was like, okay. Fitzgerald was not racist. Good to know. As far as feminist issues go, not so many in the lack or appearance of female characters. It's fairly balanced.
Yeah.
But more just... how the 1920s in general in America were this opportunity for middle class and richer girls. We always have to exclude the poor working class women,
right,
who just always had to work.
Right.
But for these richer girls to go out and drink and smoke and party and potentially have sex before they were married with multiple guys and not really be judged for it. Kind of having the freedom to let loose and not be as feminine,
right,
as was expected of them in earlier years.
And of course it was good old Tom again who at one point made the complaint that maybe women are too free these days.
Yes. Which is still, despite women having those opportunities, I think Jordan's a pretty good example of a 1920s woman who's,
yeah,
you know, playing sports and wearing pants and,
right,
has a couple boyfriends. Whereas Daisy's a little more trapped in the old gender roles of,
right,
getting married pretty young, having a baby, not being able to go out without her husband's permission sort of thing.
And that's the main, I mean, that's the main source of, like, the power imbalances you can see are the couple of married women in the story.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause Daisy really can't get out of there, like, she'd have nowhere to go.
Uh-huh.
And... be her and her kid, and what would they have? Where would they go?
Right.
Maybe back home to Louisville?
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably. Or Myrtle.
Uh-huh.
Tom's...
mistress.
Mistress. Oh, another charming Tom moment when he...
Oh, yeah.
Smacks her in the face and breaks her nose.
Yeah. Punches his mistress right in the face.
Oh, it was open-handed, Gab.
Oh, I apologize. It was a slap.
Yeah.
Because
you can beat your woman, but it has to be open-handed. I think that's what the Bible says.
And it's okay. Oh my god. Yeah, that scene made me go, oh fuck,
yeah.
Tom is now an abuser.
I thought that would become more of a thing, actually. I was,
yeah,
a little surprised it didn't come up again. You think George would be like, how'd you break your fucking nose?
Yeah, or that Myrtle maybe wouldn't want to be with him anymore?
Yeah.
But I guess in the 1920s, you were allowed to smack women around more?
Like I said, as long as you don't make a fist.
God. I don't. Okay, that's not okay, people.
That's not a current rule. I mean, that
if
was the rule.
If someone hits
that was
you,
the rule back then.
Then you leave them, please.
If someone hits you in any capacity, yeah, leave.
Open-handed or not, yeah, go away. jeez. Yes, but Myrtle, Tom's mistress, she's basically trapped in this marriage that she also doesn't like. George Wilson owns this shitty garage that doesn't really make any money, and she's trapped in this, in the Ashlands, which is this crappy, poor wasteland in between the West East and East Egg and the city. And she really wants to get out of there and do something else, but can't.
Yeah, there's not really any opportunity. She's completely reliant on her husband's success to make that happen.
Uh-huh.
So, again, another example of power imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's not just Tom that abuses his power over her. When George finds out she's been cheating, though he doesn't know all the details, he locks her, forcibly locks her in her room and won't let her out.
Uh-huh.
He's like packing up to take them out of there, pretty much against her will.
Yeah, we're gonna go somewhere.
And his neighbor is kind of raises his eyebrows at that, but not in a "you can't do that" sort of way. Just in a "well, why can't we be more reasonable about this"
yes.
kind of way.
Yes. To the point where she's runs away from him out into the middle of the road and gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
And that's her escape. Okay, so sexual issues tying into the relationship issues. Just a little bit more. The fact that every married person in the book is basically cheating on their spouse.
Right. Usually fairly openly, too.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's kind of a well-known fact that Tom has a mistress, but people don't really talk about it.
Daisy tries to cover it up a little bit.
But then, like, the next thing Tom does is, "Nick, you have to come out with me and my mistress." Just like, "All right, we're just putting that out there then."
All right, then.
"You might like her sister."
Yeah. Nick's like, "No."
Nick's like, "Stop." The first,
I don't like it.
Well, the first couple chapters, people are trying to fix Nick up with women.
That's true.
And he's just like, "Just stop it." Though he and Jordan then do end up.
Yeah, hooking up.
Kind of.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But there's also this issue that Ben and I were talking about. About how Tom is openly cheating on Daisy, but then when he finds out that Gazy and Datsby. Yup.
Datsby Gazy.
That Daisy and Gatsby are an item, he freaks out. He's super pissed.
Right, despite everyone knowing he has a mistress.
Yeah.
And that's another. That's another one of those things that appears in literature and occasionally real life. And it's usually Gabs was trying to be very nice when she was talking about it before we started recording. But it seems to me it's usually in the form of the man getting upset when the tables are turned.
Oh, I tried to say just people.
You did try really hard to say just people. But that's okay. I tend to think it's usually the guy who is fine with all his cheating but isn't okay with his wife's cheating.
Yeah, Well, he'll be cheating on her with multiple women. He will catch her hugging a friend and call her a slut.
Right.
It's like, what? That is, you're a dick.
It's more than a little hypocritical.
Yeah, that's so not okay.
And it's kind of an annoying trope.
Yeah, it happens fairly often.
Yeah. And then, just as long as we're on the subject of hypocrisy, just all the partying, the casual consumption of alcohol, yet everybody being scandalized by the idea of someone being a bootlegger.
Mm-hmm. But you are drinking, obviously you are drinking bootlegger's alcohol. It's prohibition.
Right.
What is wrong with you?
You can't drink whiskey and then turn around and say, "You're a filthy bootlegger." You just bought that from me. Don't be a dick.
It's been like if you had sex with someone and then you were like, "You're sinful."
Oh, God.
We just had sex.
That feels like a light in August moment.
Oh, no.
You whore. You just had sex with me. You're a slut. What?
I don't understand.
Stop trying to shame me. You were there, too.
You're crazy. One of the things I thought was interesting, though, everyone, you know, maybe accusing Gatsby of being a bootlegger, and he does provide a copious amount of alcohol at his parties. The champagne glasses. I wish I could remember how Nick describes the champagne glasses, because there's the typical size you serve the champagne.
Oh, yeah.
And then he mentioned something that Gatsby's serving them a bit larger than that. So people are getting trashed on champagne.
Gatsby's parties sound like a...
really fun?
Pretty fun affair.
If you want to, like, get choice.
It's a lot of dancing and singing jazz and run down to the beach and swim.
Yeah.
And sounds like a pretty good time.
It does sound like a pretty good time. But for all of that, Gatsby himself does not drink.
Yeah. He doesn't... well, why exactly doesn't he drink? Do we know that?
I think he's just trying to keep himself separate from degrading his morality. He's above that.
Yeah.
So he's trying to lure Daisy with these parties, but not because he's a partier. Because the instant he discovers she doesn't really like them, he shuts everything down.
Yes, he does.
So I think, you know, maybe he just considers himself above alcohol.
Gatsby's doing that thing where he stops doing stuff the second he discovers his girlfriend doesn't like it.
Yeah, I know.
Might go hang out with the guys anymore. Daisy doesn't like it.
I would be so mad if I was going to Gatsby's party and then parties, and he's like, I'm not throwing him anymore.
At least if I was one of the people who was actually invited, because apparently most of the guests just kind of show up for the party. And he just lets him in.
Nick receives an invitation, and he's, like, really excited about it. And then no one else, like, has an invitation.
He's like, I was an invited guest. When do I get to meet the host?
Let's see. Themes, I guess? Any plot points we want to touch on that we haven't touched on?
Maybe the hotel scene.
Okay.
Or that whole chapter, really, because that's where basically everything that actually happens.
All the shit hits the fan.
Yeah, the confrontation and the it's a really hot, oppressive summer day, and the mood for it is set brilliantly by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Like, you feel like you're hot and tired just reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide to go into the city kind of awkwardly. And they end up at this hotel parlor, and they didn't really want to do that. That's kind of where they ended up.
They kind of have to do it.
Everyone's kind of cranky and hot and bored, and finally there's a big to-do. Gatsby and Daisy kind of end up going public, and nobody handles the situation well. Basically everyone by the end of the scene just looks bad.
Yeah. I will say, one of the lines I did like was when Daisy said, open another window, and someone says, all the windows are open, and she goes, someone get an axe.
Yeah. It's
tear
hot.
Tear down the wall.
See, that's one of the moments that makes me think Daisy might actually be kind of fun to hang out with. At least if you can get her to not be fake all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's a pretty funny joke,
yeah,
actually. Windows are open, get an axe.
Sucks.
Why isn't the... everyone's just so cranky in that scene. Why isn't the ice up here yet? Where are our drinks? I don't even want the drink. Where's the ice? I told him to bring the ice.
Yelling about the ice.
Everyone's just upset the whole time. It's like, no wonder they broke out into an argument.
Yeah. Well, you know, the heated atmosphere and the heated temperament sort of thing. But yeah, this is the scene where Gatsby tries to get Daisy to tell Tom that she never loved him. And Daisy is getting pushed into this too fast. Doesn't really know what her own feelings are. She loves Gatsby, or at least she thinks she does. She doesn't like Tom anymore, but she doesn't really know what she wants to do about that.
Yeah.
And so she's freaking out, and then Tom is
being Tom,
freaking out. Yeah. Although I did think, despite the fact that I think he's a douche, I thought he did make a good point when he said to Gatsby, you know, Daisy and I have been married for however long, and you can't possibly know all the different parts of our relationship,
right,
and the good stuff that happened, and you're just making assumptions.
That's true.
That's like when, you know, someone comes in from the outside and falls in love with someone in a relationship, and why don't you leave him? He sucks. But, you know, they don't know all the...
It's a little bit of that in every day.
Yeah.
It's kind of that idea.
Or just when you judge couples, you know?
Right,
they
yeah.
They meet, and you don't actually know how their relationships work.
Right. You go, man, they don't seem like a very good... match. It's like, well, you've hung out with them 10 times, and they've been together for 5 years, so maybe you don't know everything.
Maybe they were in a bad mood one time, or whatever. So, although I would say that Tom and Daisy's marriage isn't great.
Well, just because being married to Tom wouldn't be great. And Daisy doesn't seem like his type, anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, Tom comes across as a dick, because he is, and Gatsby's coming across way too strong.
Yeah.
Daisy's just confused, and Nick and Jordan are awkwardly watching.
Can we go? Is it all right if we leave? But then they won't let him leave.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, I guess we'll just sit here awkwardly.
Yeah, not intervene in this.
Like, well, I can understand the urge to stay out of that, but when I stand up to go and they say, sit down, I'm either like, no, you get to hash this out without me.
I'm leaving.
If I'm in this room, I'm finding a way to shut all of you people up, because this is intolerable.
Yeah.
Like, just put yourself out there a little bit, Nick.
Yeah.
I don't care if you leave the room. Just actually do it.
Do something.
Exactly. You and Jordan, do something.
Which is really Nick's problem the whole book, is you need to do something.
Yeah, which is why we were struggling to name him protagonist for a minute there.
Yeah, and you'll notice that we pretty much, ever since we described his character, haven't talked about it again.
Because he's not involved.
He's not that interesting. Yeah, and that's the big climactic scene. Daisy says, I want to go. Tom says, why don't you and Gatsby leave together? And they leave, and Nick and Jordan and Tom leave, I don't know, 20 minutes after them. And that's where they find Myrtle dead from having been struck by a car. And it turns out that Daisy, super upset, decides to drive to calm down, which is not a great idea, actually. If you're upset, you probably shouldn't be driving. Freaking out, driving like crazy, because she's freaking out, and then Myrtle runs out in the middle of the road, and they hit her and kill her and keep going.
Yeah, that might actually be the big plot twist, is that Daisy was driving.
Yes, because... it's Gatsby's car. You assume Gatsby's driving. That he... Well, you know, Tom thinks maybe he's trying to spite him or his thought process is. And then Gatsby reveals that Daisy was driving. But he's never going to tell anybody that.
Right.
He's going to take the fall for it.
Move on to our themes here.
Yeah. Everyone is trapped by the past. Gatsby in particular.
Yes.
Daisy
too, I would argue.
Yeah. Obsessed with her old role as a Southern Belle kind of thing, and his obsession with his past relationship with Daisy and trying to get back to that. I think she's pretty interested in getting back to that, because she makes comments about having fun like this and all that sort of thing. Even the last line in the book, Nick makes some comment about how we're all in boats that are, I don't remember exactly what it is, but, you know, being mercilessly pushed back by the tide of the past or something like that. No one can really escape their past, even if you're trying to.
It's a theme I've seen in other stories, I suppose, as well.
Yeah.
Cowboy Bebop comes right to mind, actually. Yeah. For those of you who are... I don't know. Is that even nerd inclined at this point?
Well, I'd say there are probably a fair amount of people who still haven't heard of it, but you don't expect to be a nerd to watch. Yeah.
All right. So, that story has no relationship to this whatsoever, other than there might be jazz.
True.
But, anywho. And then I don't know if Tom is...
maybe Tom is supposed to be trapped by his past to some degree, too, because his glory days were when he was a senior in college.
Uh-huh, and he's trying to hold on to that.
And it just keeps slipping away because it's bad to peak when you're 21, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And there's also this idea maybe of popularity versus intimacy. Gatsby has all these people coming to his parties, and a lot of them are regulars. And at his funeral, it's his dad, Nick, and one owlish-looking guy in glasses who liked to hang out in the library.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, and I mean, we're talking, his parties were full of people.
Right.
And no one comes to his funeral, except for three people. And so you would think if you threw awesome lavish parties all the time and, you know, the most popular guy in town, that your funeral would be packed.
Right.
But just because people are going there doesn't mean that they know you.
Right, yeah, exactly. Especially since he kind of went out of his way to not be known well.
Uh-huh.
Which, again, is why I kind of wonder what his motivation was in having all these parties in the first place, other than just to attract Daisy, because it seems like he could have found other ways to do that.
Yeah,
that
well,
be less lavish, less expensive, and equally effective.
Well, I think he was trying to show off his wealth, too. Mm-hmm. And he had to prove to Daisy that he was rich enough for her.
Yeah, that could be it.
So
there's definitely a new versus old money thing going on, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because West Egg is the new money.
Mm-hmm. And East Egg is the old money.
They look down on them.
Oh, yes, they are quite.
Yes.
Gatsby's definitely new money.
Yeah.
Tom and Daisy are definitely old money.
And definitely all of the old money folks were very bored, very detached most of the time. They're the ones who are putting on a face. And then you have Gatsby, who is also putting on a face a lot of the time. That old sport affectation, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But he does actually seem to want things, and
yeah,
he does have a direction, even if it's borderline stalkery.
Yeah, and I think even though Nick ends up pretty much being disgusted by everyone in the whole thing,
yeah,
he does look up to Gatsby in a way, and maybe it's just Gatsby's, you know, purity of desire, having real emotions, attracts him.
Well, it's kind of, it's almost like if Gatsby had not gotten shot to death, maybe he and Nick actually could have been close friends eventually.
Uh-huh.
Like, maybe Gatsby would have had the potential to be a good guy as opposed to the rest of these people, even though he was probably involved in illegal stuff.
And yeah.
He was involved in gambling and bootlegging. He was involved in those two things, for sure.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know
what else?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what was happening as part of his business sidelines. Maybe they were, maybe he had guys who were, like, beating people up and doing really, really bad things and not just distributing liquor illegally.
Yeah.
We don't know. But he seemed like he could be a real person, whereas the others were just so bored.
Yeah.
I'm alive, but I don't care.
Well, and ultimately, Daisy chooses not to leave Tom. You know, Gatsby's waiting on her phone call, and she never calls, and Nick makes some comment that she and Tom just go off, and, you know, that's their way, is to go in, wreck people's lives, and then just trot off without a care.
Yep.
So, I mean, you even get the impression from what Nick says that 6 months, Daisy's not even really gonna give a shit.
Yeah, that would be the worst. That would be the worst thing to come of this, maybe. I mean, the aftermath, obviously, people getting killed is pretty bad.
Yeah.
But the aftermath of the deaths, if it was the object of his affections, doesn't even really remember it a year down the road.
I think that's the real tragedy, is that, you know, Gatsby's so in love with her, and she just really can't. She almost seems on the edge of it at one point, but she just really can't quite convince herself to, I think, authentically go over into that boat and...
Yeah, I think the timing was just all wrong. Maybe that ties into the being a prisoner to the past as well. Because, like, if he'd come back from the war sooner, or if the war hadn't happened, or if she hadn't met Tom for another 2 or 3 years, maybe she would have been able to have feelings for Gatsby as strong as his were for her.
Right. Getting out of that rut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, symbols. We actually have symbols this week.
Symbol alert!
It's some real literary fiction, guys.
That's right.
So, if you read this book and don't know this is a symbol, you're really dumb. Because, like, Nick basically tells you it's a symbol.
Yeah.
So, the green light at the end of the dock. And this is a light, I think, that's either coming from Daisy's dock or in the direction of Daisy's dock.
Right.
And Gatsby likes to go out onto his and just stare out at this green light, and it's this symbol of hope and Daisy, basically, of all his dreams coming true.
Right, yeah. And gets mentioned after she comes over to Gatsby's house, he says, oh, it's, you know, one of, kind of on the subject earlier, you talking about how she can't live up to his expectations, and Nick describes it as one of the things that will be less magical to Gatsby from then on, is seeing the light across the bay.
Yeah, it no longer has that promise of hope.
Right.
But he kind of suggests that the green light cannot kind of act as this promise of hope for everyone,
because
when he talks about the boats being beaten back by the past, he's also talking about how everyone's always reaching for the green light.
Right, yeah.
That we're always hoping for the future, but then we're all stuck in the past. Cheerful.
Yeah, not sure I agree with this message. The views and opinions of this book are not necessarily those of the podcast. And then the billboard of Dr. T.J. What was I about to say? T.J. Eckelberg.
Eckelberg.
The Eyes of God.
Yeah, and if you read a copy of this in school, your version probably had big old eyes on the front of it.
In fact, it did.
Yeah, because of this billboard. It's totally abandoned, kind of a torn up billboard, and the guy's not around anymore, but it's just a giant pair of eyes with spectacles on it.
Yeah.
That sits over the Ashlands.
Yes.
And this whole scene with Myrtle getting hit by the car and all that, this is all watched over by the billboard of T.J. Right. Eckelberg.
Who's been watching the Wilson's little shop the whole time.
Yeah.
Anyway, like when they first go there and this is my mistress. Come meet me later. I might sell you this car tomorrow. Okay, I gotta go to the office. Meet me in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And eyes of God.
Yeah, these judgment eyes. I mean, I don't remember if that... Do they say eyes of God in the book?
I think so.
It's... Again, these symbols are both pretty apparent. You don't have to really read into it too much.
You don't have to be an English professor to pick that up on you.
Okay. Let's see. What else we got? We talked about all those things. Oh, so there was one more thing I wanted to discuss concerning Gatsby and Daisy's relationship that surprised me. Because Gatsby set himself up as this longtime lover of Daisy, who's been pining after her, and you would just think him to be the most romantic guy in the entire world, right? Like, even if you don't consider him romantic, he is romantic in his thoughts. And he actually talks about meeting Daisy, and how at first he wasn't in love with her, and he had experienced with other women before, and he just decides, I'm gonna take Daisy, kind of for fun. He just wants to have sex with her. And then it's not until after all of that he kind of goes, oh, I like her.
Right, yeah.
But the way he describes it, he says something along the lines of, I decided I was going to take her, and then I took her. And I was like, that sounds kind of, like, creepy. Like, sexual assault,
yeah,
almost.
It doesn't, it has disturbing overtones.
Yeah, and that would add a whole new layer of fuck-upness.
Right.
And I don't think he raped her.
No, I don't think that's what happened either.
I think he just convinced her to have sex, and then he was just going to drop her, but then he fell in love with her.
Right.
I just found that surprising, because you would think him to, you know, I was madly in love with her, and I was, instead he was, I just wanted to have sex with her.
His moment of realism, I think, yeah. In the middle of the romantic streak. Okay, let's see. So, how about strengths and weaknesses of the writing?
Yeah. So we decided this book needs a ton of editing. Could be like half as long.
Right.
No, the book does not have any extra scenes. It could maybe use a little bit more, but it doesn't really need more. Mm-hmm. It's a really good length for what it's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've asked a couple of small questions about it, but they're not things that need to be answered, for sure. Uh-huh. And one thing that Fitzgerald does a really good job of is setting moods. Like, every chapter kind of has a prevailing mood to it, and it's, like, you feel it a little bit when you're mm-hmm. reading it. Like, the first chapter, everyone's just hanging out and bored. I was definitely getting ennui. I would say intense ennui, but I think that stops being ennui if it's intense.
Right, and the chapter with the hotel, it's the hot right. and stifling atmosphere that we were talking about.
Or it's kind of like that sad loneliness of the final chapter.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So that's definitely a big strength of his, and characters were pretty good. They're not strong, like, super memorable, spicy personality type of characters.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons people still read this book mm-hmm. is because it reflects the mood of the 1920s so well.
Yeah.
Because it was written around that time by someone who lived that time.
Right.
And so the characters aren't necessarily awesome original characters, but they all reflect different sorts of people you would have found.
Right.
And, you know, the partying and the richness and all that, I think, is reflected really well through the book. So that's kind of more of the hallmark for it than the characterization.
That makes sense to me. And there are a couple little clever moments in there, too, that actually wouldn't mind getting more of. But, I don't know, maybe it happens in another book of his. I can't say.
Yeah, I haven't read any of his other stuff, so I don't know.
Me neither. I have no idea what's even out there, to be honest. Okay.
Right. Questions.
All right. Is Tom a murderer?
Yeah, so we have a real moral issue here.
Right. So, Tom goes to the garage, after Myrtle is killed, he cuts into the crowd, finds George, and basically says, I know whose car that was.
Here's where he lives.
Yeah, here's how you can find him. And George goes and shoots Gatsby dead. So my question is, does that make Tom a murderer? Did he know that's what was going to happen? He kind of implied yes.
Uh-huh.
She said, well, I didn't want him to shoot me, more or less.
Yeah, they suspected him a little bit because he had been driving the yellow car earlier, and someone says they mentioned they saw a yellow car. Mm. And so Tom's probably trying to protect himself to a degree. Saying, no, I don't drive that car. Mine's the blue one.
Right.
But at the same time, he's really pissed at Gatsby.
Yep, he is.
And I don't think he's at all sad that he's dead. Basically says he deserved it.
Yep.
So, and Ben made the good point that if he had paid George to go shoot Gatsby, then we would consider that
right.
murderous intent. So,
whereas he just kind of manipulated him into shooting Gatsby. I mean, and then George killed himself. I mean, I think at the very least, like, best case moral scenario for Tom, he bears responsibility for what happened.
Uh-huh. And if you think about it, if Tom hadn't had the affair with Myrtle, she never would have been locked up. She never would have run out into the road and gotten murdered in the first place.
True.
So you could pin the entire thing on him, which I don't think is fair, because how is he supposed to know that having an affair is
right.
going to lead to her getting hit by a car? But
no, it's a conversation with George that
this
I
the
would
real
blame,
kicker.
Put blame on him for.
So, guess that's it.
Yeah, did you like it?
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I also think it's pretty good.
I don't love it. I think for a classic, it's extremely readable. Mm. And as we've mentioned multiple times, it's short. And so, as far as that goes, like, I like it because you just sit down and you go through it, and you're like, oh, that was a fun little story. I don't feel it really resonated with me a whole bunch, but I do think it's a great book to have high schoolers read to teach them a little bit about the 1920s and symbolism and some of the other stuff going on that they will probably read and enjoy.
There's a fair amount to discuss. We've talked for a pretty good amount of time about a very short novel.
Uh-huh.
Probably not even a novel, actually. It's probably novella length or less.
I probably, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what the word count is. Okay, well, what are you reading right now?
I'm still on Frauds, Myths, and Mysteries by Ken Fader. Mostly because I just started reading and editing a new book for a book that is to be published later this year, so I don't think I can really talk about it too much.
Yeah.
but I'm doing that full pay.
All right. Good for you. I wish I was reading for pay. I am on Idiot America still because I had to force march through Hyperion so Gabs could borrow it from me. which was fine, actually. I read pretty easily. That one went down the hatch smoothly for me. So yeah, I'm still more or less at the same point on that I was last time we recorded. And I just got my copy of The Human Division by John Scalzi in the mail today, his newest book, and I'm quite excited to begin reading it, which I probably will begin in the next day or two.
Hey, because you don't have to waste the week reading Hyperion.
Yeah, that's right. So if you want to comment on anything you've heard, or if you have questions of your own, or, you know, whatever, then you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us, which we now have two people who email us. Thank you, Kevin. novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We are on Twitter @novelideaspod.
Yeah, Ben and I have both been tweeting.
Yes, we're trying to be a little more active.
He's more active than me, but I got on there a little bit. And you can also find us on iTunes.
Yep, and if you do that, then rate, review, comment, etc.
Etc, etc.
Woo! Okay, well, I guess we kind of gave away that we're doing Hyperion next week. That's Hyperion by Dan Simmons. I think there might be more than one out there. It's possible.
This is the one by Dan Simmons. We'll just repeat that so no one accidentally reads the wrong Hyperion.
That's right.
Like they would ever read.
I think there's a poem by Keats. I'm pretty sure that's where the title comes from. Because Dan Simmons is... If he wasn't an English major, then he's the biggest lit nerd in the entire world.
Yeah. The one other book I've read by him focuses around the plot of the Iliad and features a robot who loves Shakespeare.
And another robot who loves Proust.
Oh, yeah! Yeah! and Hyperion, from what I can tell so far, is the Canterbury Tales in space!
Yeah, more or less. Also with references to Shakespeare and Keats and Yeats. And there's a lot of poetry, romantic poetry references in this one, actually.
Dan Simmons, a big old nerd.
Big old lit nerd. So, anyway, we'll be doing that next week. And that's all for this time. So, see ya.
If Beale Street could talk, married men would have to take their beds and walk, except one or two.